Contrary to popular belief, most guys with man breasts cannot just bench press their way to perfect pecs. They have a medical condition called gynecomastia, and Dr. Frank Lista of the Plastic Surgery Clinic can help. A world-renowned plastic surgeon, Dr. Lista has perfected the procedure for correcting gynecomastia. Find out more at theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca. Get off the bench and into the game. Theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca.
When the bobcat's away, the mouse will play. In this analogy, Jeff Blair is the mouse. Jeff Blair, guest host for the vacationing Bob McCowan. Primetime Sports is on the air on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Reach out, touch faith.
Welcome to Primetime Sports for Tuesday. Oh, God, if you only knew what we just were talking about. Welcome to Primetime Sports for Tuesday, September 1st. Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCowan. Rash Madani will join us as my co-host in the 5 o'clock hour. Joe Siddle joins us from the ballpark. The Blue Jays and Cleveland Indians will play the second game of their three-game series tonight at the Rogers Center. Jays 4-2 losers to the Indians last night, helped out by the fact, however, that the New York Yankees spit out the bit with the bases loaded. They lost as well, so the Jays are still a game and a half up on the New York Yankees atop the American League East. Joe Siddle will be along at 5:10. LeVar Arrington of the NFL Network. This is going to be a lot of fun. He'll join us at 5:35, and we'll build a little bit on the discussion we had with Clinton Portis yesterday about the issues at the Redskins organization. And, yeah, we'll talk about the Flategate as well. Bob Ryan of the Globe join us, and Doug Smith will join us from Mexico City. Canada is in Mexico City and has gotten the FIBA Americas tournament underway. They are currently leading Argentina as we speak, as Canada attempts to qualify for the Rio Olympics. Let's talk baseball out of the gate, though. As I said, we will have baseball tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, 7 o'clock first pitch. Blue Jays and Cleveland Indians on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet East Ontario, West Pacific. It's time now to bring in our very good friend, the fifth Beatle himself, John Paul Morosi from Fox Sports. Hello, Mr. Morosi.
I'm doing very well, Jeff, and I am eager to hear, next time we meet over some adult beverages, what exactly that conversation was prior to us beginning this segment.
I would take, you know what, it would be, the explanation would just take too long.
No, as I said, I'm eager to hear, it sounds like it's maybe a two-beverage talk, and we'll have to have that next time I'm in your great city of Toronto.
Okay, it would be long and complicated, and it would involve props.
Those are the best stories, aren't they?
Well, this is a dicey prop. We might have a difficult time getting this into the bar. Well, it depends on the bar. Anyhow, we'll talk about that.
To be continued at a later date.
Yeah, to be continued at a little date off the air. So the waiver trade deadline, not to be confused with the non-waiver trade deadline, is come and gone. September call-ups have been made. Did anybody alter your opinion of them in the past two or three days? Any contending teams, perhaps?
You know, they were modest upgrades. I think the Cubs did well to get Austin Jackson. I think the Royals getting Johnny Gomes, that's going to help them. It's a righty bat with some power. I think Alejandro Deaza was an essential acquisition for the Giants because of their concern about when Hunter Pence is coming back. But that said, that loss last night for the Giants was a tough one. Of course, it ended when you and I were getting up for breakfast here this morning, a 14-inning mm-hmm. game, I believe, out in L.A. on the West Coast. But that was a tough loss for the Giants because I think if they win that game, all of a sudden it's 2.5 games, and you can dream a little bit. Now it's 4.5. The Dodgers, of course, they've had their struggles scoring runs. But so I think for the Giants, it's a good move to to get Diaz, it may be a bit too little too late, although I do think the Dodgers, again, as I mentioned, their struggle scoring runs. They get Justin Ruggiano last night. I thought they might have wanted to get an everyday hitter. Ruggiano should be a bit of a platoon bat that can help them in center field with Kike Hernandez's injury absence. So, of course, Addison Reed goes to the Mets. He'll help in the seventh inning. So, modest upgrades all around. I don't think we're seeing any game changers, but I think at this time of the year, it's always good to get that one more piece to help fortify your bench. And the Royals, by the way, Jeff, I should add, partially because they now have Johnny Gomes, but that ball club now in Kansas City is the oldest roster in the major leagues previous to the September call-up. So as of August 31st, the Royals had the oldest team in the major leagues, second, the Blue Jays. So the Royals and the Jays, we think of them as sort of newcomers to the postseason, of course, with the Royals last year, but in fact, very much win-now teams because of the age on their roster and the upcoming free agents there for both clubs.
And, you know, it's funny, isn't it? Johnny Gomes has kind of become, in some ways, I'm not going to say he's as good a player, as good a hitter as Don Baylor, but he's kind of become this generation's one of those guys that you have to add if you're a playoff team, a guy who's good in the clubhouse, a guy who can contribute on the field, a little bit like Eric Hinsky kind of was for about four or 5 years. Wherever Eric Hinsky went, it seemed that a World Series appearance followed, and that's happened to Johnny Gomes, hasn't it?
Yes, even Cliff Floyd, the great former
Cliff Floyd, yes,
type of a ball player. So yeah, I think Johnny Gomes, first of all, as you mentioned, a great guy in the clubhouse. I think he is at bats have gotten better over the last month. I believe his OPS is above 900 or thereabouts in the month of August. So I think his at bats have gotten better. You've seen him really hit for some power in Atlanta over the last few weeks. So I think it's a good upgrade for the Royals, who, again, they're all in, and they're a ball club. Of course, last year they got Raul Labañez. They got Josh Willingham. So I think he's a good guy to help balance out their club. Of course, they get Alex Gordon back from the disabled list today. So that's going to be a very intriguing scenario for the Royals. How do they use him? How many days off does he need? The Royals are fortunate, Jeff, in that they have such a comfortable lead in the American League Central. They have the luxury of taking their time with Alex, seeing how his body responds. That was obviously a very, very traumatic injury that he had there, running into the wall with a groin tear. So I think for him to come back and I think get more comfortable with his at-bats, having a guy like Johnny Gomes around, I think helps spell Alex Gordon. Also, even Kendrys Morales at the DH spot, or even a corner outfielder, it just gives you that little bit ability to really rest your guys down the stretch and also keep a guy sharp who can maybe help you out against a tough lefty reliever late in the ball game. Maybe if it's against, you know, Moustakas and Hosmer have taken so many strides, but maybe it helps you out against a tough lefty reliever late in the ball game.
The Royals have a 13-game lead in the AL Central.
I think they're
Central.
Okay.
They look like they should. They can at least start printing wild card tickets, I guess, with a 13-game lead. John, what do you think this team? What do you think that team, and in particular its manager Ned Yost, may have learned from last year's experience as they approach the postseason this year? Because I mean, this is. I remember, well, you know, Jim Leland, you covered him more than I did. You talked to Jim Leland about the difficulty of kind of keeping a team in it, or keeping a team's head in it when they've got a big lead at any point in September. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's a managerial feat in itself. It's not just a matter of going to the whip and, you know, having the team close fast and make the playoffs, but there's a certain art to managing a team that's got stuff locked up well in advance.
Well, there is, and you raise a great point, Jeff, because I think you look at the playoffs last year, of course, we had two wild card teams meeting in the World Series, and that's not an accident. And I think that once the wild card team gets into the dance and then plays the top seed, remember, the peril of being the top seed now in this new format is that whoever you play in the first round just came off an amazingly emotional one-game win, just had that champagne celebration. They're feeling great about themselves. And, oh, by the way, they have nothing to lose. No one's predicting that they're going to beat you. Mm-hmm. And you're now supposed to win. You're supposed to hold serve at home. And I really think you're sitting there, you're opening the series at home, two games, and you're expected to hold serve against what is almost assuredly a hot team. That's a challenge. It's a legitimate challenge. And you look at last year, of course, the Royals win that game. They almost lost to the A's, of course, in the wild card game. But once they won the game, they swept the Angels. The Giants win that series against the Nationals in four games. So add those two series together. The top seeds, respectively, in both leagues were 1-6 in the playoffs last year. 1-6. So that tells you that when you have that top spot secured, maybe you've taken that foot off the accelerator just a little bit. I think it's hard to get it back. The one thing I would say about the Royals, actually a couple things. Number one, much like the Jays in their current incarnation, they love playing together. They have a palpable joy about going to the ballpark. You know, I'm lucky in my role with Fox this year, Jeff, I've been able to be a sideline reporter, and you get a chance to see the different character of teams. The Royals, and from being next to their dugout a couple different times, they have the most fun of any team I've seen in baseball ever. They have such a great time just being with each other, and I think that's going to help them combat any of that dullness that you might see in the month of September, early October, because they just really do love being in the ballpark together. Also, the style of play they have, I think, is probably less of a threat of being lulled into that same sense of dullness offensively, because they have action on the bases, they have guys that get on base, they have guys that put the ball in play, they don't strike out a lot. I think the teams that have you look back at the Tigers, the way they played in the World Series back in 2012, or the Angels last year, frankly, against the Royals, teams that don't run a lot, that don't have a lot of action on the bases, don't have a lot of athleticism, those are the teams that when they have a layoff or they're playing a pumped-up athletic team, they, I think, are at the most vulnerability to have that quick send-home, because they just don't have that same level of energy as the team they're playing.
In conversation with John Paul Morosi, national baseball writer for Fox Sports, you know, obviously we focus a lot on the Blue Jays here, but taking a look at the New York Mets, if you look from the end of July till now, they are right behind the Blue Jays in runs scored. You know, the Mets, they're all about pitching. We know about all those good young arms. But do we give Sandy Alderson, their general manager, enough credit for the way he's kind of he's molded that lineup? Because this is a lineup that's hitting home runs now. And John, this is a lineup that up until the All-Star break couldn't hit a home run to save its life, literally.
Well, exactly. And I think you look at that ball club right now, Jeff, and they really are clicking on all cylinders. And I do give a lot of credit to Sandy, and I think you're right that maybe people have not been as complimentary of him as they should be, because this was a team we know for a long time, of course, the Wilpons, they lost a lot of money in the Madoff scandal, and they were hampered, I think, in their overall operation in the club for a period of time after that. And you look at the way that they've now gone about things this year, have they made huge splashy moves? Well, Cespedes was a pretty big move.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they got Clipper, they got Addison Reed to help their bullpen. They made the Uribe trade, which I think helped them out a lot. Kelly Johnson. So they've made a lot of incremental upgrades. And you look up and down that roster, and it's a solid, solid team. And I think that did Sandy Alderson make the huge free agent play? No, but he didn't really have to. Granderson's come along a little bit. Kadire, they've gotten a lot of professional good guys. You look at the way that they've done things, and also I think you also have to credit the GM for not making moves and for taking care of the young pitching that he had in the system, which he did. So I think you give him a lot of credit for the way he's managed the assets that he has, which is one reason why their pitching is so good and why they're a very dangerous team to face in the playoffs, and also the moves that he's made. Cespedes has worked out. Bear in mind, of course, David Wright just came back a short time ago, and he was the guy that has been their most important player for a long time. He was nowhere to be found, obviously, for most of the season. So I think you look at that ball club, Jeff, I give Sandy Alderson a lot of credit. I think a very impressive way of managing that roster. He should be getting more credit, and I think it's interesting to point out today, Jeff, the Mets have, aside from the Royals, the second lowest magic number of any team in the major leagues right now, even lower than the Cardinals and the Dodgers. So a great job by the Mets. It looks like their postseason drought back to 2006 is about to end this year.
John, it's been a day now since Mark Shapiro's hiring was made official by the Blue Jays ownership, by Rogers Communications. Any more of an idea what the industry makes of this and what they think it might mean for Alex Anthopoulos?
You know, it's a great question, and we don't know, Jeff, I think, in the final analysis exactly what this means for Alex in the long term. I do think in the near term, he's done a great job, I think, with this ball club. We all know that. You go back, especially from November to now, you could argue he's been the best GM in the game. So I think that his resume at this moment speaks for itself. And I think Mark Shapiro, as you know, and certainly his father, Ron Shapiro, a longtime agent in baseball, he's a very fair person. a very intelligent person, obviously, a very conscientious person, one who I think is very aware of culture and cultivating that leadership within an organization and promoting that brand throughout the organization the way that he did in Cleveland. You look at the number of guys that have gone on to become GMs from the Indians, Tree, if you will, O'Dowd, Josh Burns, Neil Huntington with the Pirates, a lot of success stories. Of course, John Farrell went from being the player development director there to, of course, a major league manager. So it's been a factory of great baseball minds. And I think that the interesting question is going to be, how does that philosophy gel with Alex in the long term? Does Alex want to be a part of that? Or does he find the culture and maybe not quite what he wants to be, and does he go somewhere else? I think that right now, again, Alex has done a phenomenal job with his roster. I'm sure Mark respects that. I think Alex looks up to Mark and respects Mark. I think the respect is goes both ways. So I think from that standpoint, it'll be a relatively easy transition because the two men know each other exceptionally well by being at the same general managers' meetings and just being in those same GM circles for a very long time. So I think Alex is very well liked in the industry. I think we know certainly the moves, again, I think have really accounted well for him. So I think I would say about 95% sure Alex certainly is going to be in this job on opening day 2016. 2018, who knows? Maybe the Expos are back by then, Jeff, when he's won that. Who knows?
But I knew you were going there.
I had to mention that, by the way. But
I knew you were going there.
You knew I was going there.
Of course.
I think that in general, I think we'll wait to see what Mark Shapiro does. But I think overall his modus operandi has been to really come into an organization, assess what's there, work with the people who are there. And I really think in general, Mark is going to take a very long view of this. The reason why he left Cleveland, I don't think it was anything bad about the situation with the Indians, although, of course, we know the attendance there has been down. But I think it's all about what the opportunity is in Toronto. I think now, finally, you look at this ball club on the field, the star power they have, it's getting back to where it was two decades ago from the standpoint of being and looking like a large market team. The Jays now look like a large market team with a lot of stars, and I think the industry forgot for a period of time, Jeff, what Toronto really represents, how big the city is, what the power of that market is, and the whole country of Canada. Now the industry is seeing it again. I think it's caught a lot of people, maybe some people in the States by surprise. They're like, oh yeah, Toronto's like the fourth largest city in North America, or in the U.S., Canada, in Mexico. So, okay, yeah, it should certainly have a team looks like this. So I think that Mark Shapiro is very smart, knows the possibilities in Toronto, and I think he's going to be very very open-minded about how he's going to attack the challenges and the opportunities that he has now in Toronto.
Marco Estrada will be on the mound tonight for the Blue Jays as they take on the Indians. He's a guy that Alex acquired for Adam Lind from the Milwaukee Brewers in a deal that tends to sneak through the cracks a little bit, I think. What do you think the market would be for Marco Estrada? I mean, if you're the Jays, you've got to be seriously thinking about re-signing this guy. What do you think the market would be for him? Now, he's 32. He's having a real good year. His ERA is 3.19. His WHIP is 1.094, which, is better than it was last year. He's pitched 135 and a third innings. He will likely surpass a career high in innings pitched. What do you think the market would be for a guy like that?
You know, Jeff, it's very interesting because I think Marco Estrada has a pretty young arm for his age.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you look at the amount of innings he's thrown, it's not a very high total. I can see him getting certainly 2 to 3 years and maybe even more than that, frankly. It wouldn't shock me. But I think 2 to 3 years, when you look at where the pitching market is, I think 2 to 3 years at maybe $6-8 million per. I think he has pitched himself into that class, maybe even more than that. I mean, he's a good pitcher. And I think that the question overall, Jeff, speaks to the urgency for this ball club right now. You almost forget, because of maybe how new this whole phenomenon is for this ball club, but they've got David Price, of course, as we know, free agent. Mark Burley, free agent. Estrada, free agent. They're going to have to rebuild this whole rotation. Not the whole rotation, but a lot of it. And I think, of course, then that would mean more pressure on Drew Hutchison. And, oh, by the way, that next class of starting pitchers, of course, Stroman will come back next year, and Sanchez will see what his role ends up being in the long term. But that group of Norris and Boyd, they're gone. Castro's gone. Hoffman's gone. So the guys that you were looking to be good replacements in this rotation for years to come aren't around anymore. So I think it's a situation where in that ballpark in particular, Jeff, you got to find pitchers that can miss bats, pitch in the American League East in a hitter-friendly ballpark. You know, this pitching staff, the rotation, certainly over the last really 6 weeks or so, has found that sweet spot of getting in a good rhythm. But if the Jays aren't able to bring back Estrada and Burley, we all know obviously David Price is going to be a tough guy to sign because of the interest level in him across the industry. But this is a pitching rotation that is going to need some work in the offseason. I think it would really do the Jays a lot of favors if they're able to get Estrada back in the fold because of his versatility. And again, a great move by Alex. And I also think, if I can make one more point on the general good moves by Alex, you look back, and I wonder if you add up the home runs, okay, by Edwin Encarnacion and Bautista over the last 4 or 5 years, and you think of the dollars spent on those players for a very reasonable sum in both for both those guys. You compare that to what Cabrera's making and Votto's making and Giancarlo Stanton, some of the other big-name sluggers in this game. Encarnacion and Bautista are right in that discussion. I think one of the better moves Alex ever made was getting Encarnacion to Toronto and then I think extending him when he did, because that move has saved the Jays a lot of money and gotten them a lot of home runs over the years.
It certainly has. Hey, John, if you were the Blue Jays, and it is September 1st, and you were looking ahead to the playoffs, which American League team would you not want to face if you're the Blue Jays? Who do you think matches up best with them?
That's a great question. I think you look at those the teams in the league. I think the Royals are a tough team to play because their bullpen is good, although obviously we know Greg Holland hasn't quite been himself this year, so it's maybe not quite as dominant as it was. I think that's a team that I think would be tough to play. I think the Astros, you know, they're going to get George Springer back at some point. I think the Jays, if they matched up with them, you would say the Jays, rotation-wise, probably have the edge on Houston. I think Houston still has a good rotation, but I think the Jays, the way they're pitching right now, as long as they continue on this path, I think probably have the better rotation. Although I would say this, and again, this goes back to what we talked about earlier in this segment, the wild card winner, if it's Texas, I don't want to deal with Texas right now. I mean, you got to deal with Hamels and Holland, and of course you got a guy in Colby Lewis who's been in the postseason before. They're hot, so you know the Yankees seem to be. There's a little bit of that fatigue you're seeing now with the older bodies, and Teixeira's injury is a big concern for them. Of course, that was a game last night. The Yankees probably should have won. They could have picked up a game on the Jays, didn't do it. So I think that you look at where that all stands right now. I would say of the teams that I'm sure are going to be in, I would not want to play the Royals. I think that would be a tough matchup, but one that I think certainly the Jays could win. But I look at that first round, and again, it looks like it would probably be Kansas City against the wild card winner. A Royals-Rangers series, I think, would be dangerous for the Royals. That Rangers team, I think, if they're able to get in, they've got power, they've got a little bit of athleticism, and now you look at the way the rotation sets up. Of course, they got Yovani Gallardo still in that rotation, a solid pitcher as well. They could mix in two lefties, two righties. That's a pretty good ball club right there in Texas right now. Their bullpen has been restocked with the moves they made at the deadline. So I like the moves that Texas has made. So I'm going to say they're a sleeper team. I think they could be a pretty dangerous team there in the American League wildcard picture.
Mr. Morosi, I'm going to let you scoot. Thanks so much.
It sounds great. I worked in two Expos references, Jeff.
You did. I was impressed.
To that segment.
You're down in your hockey references. I was a little disappointed in that.
I've replaced the hockey references of late with Expos references. We're going to keep that up. You know, it looks like, because, Jeff, it looks like the Nordiques are going to come back at some point, so I got to put all my support behind the Expos to get them back, too.
It's amazing what you'll do for a road trip. It really is. You know, you can go. It is permissible to go to Montreal without having a baseball team there.
I know. I'm still working on. You know me. I'm trying to work on Mrs. Morosi to relocate there, but we'll see how that goes.
Well, let us know if that happens.
Sounds good. We'll do.
Take care.
Thanks, Jeff.
It's John Paul Morosi, the national baseball writer for Fox Sports. His take on the American League race. I don't know if I would say, well, granted, the Blue Jays starting rotation is pitching pretty well right now. I don't know if it's that necessarily unbalanced, Jays versus Houston, in terms of pitching. Top to bottom, I still might take the Astros. Although the Jays pitching performance in the second half is really, it's not necessarily an underrated story, but it's certainly taken a back seat to the way this team is hitting. And it's taken a backseat to, you know, the exploits of Josh Donaldson and Edwin Encarnacion. coming off a tremendous month of August for both of them. But I still, the Astros still concern me. The Astros still concern me of all the teams the Blue Jays may face. Michael on Twitter pointing out that he would take the Rangers' lefty rotation in the playoffs for the Jays all day. Valid, a very good point. The one thing about the Rangers is you're going to see some left-handed pitching, and that would certainly you would think play into the Blue Jays' hands. So again, we will have Blue Jays baseball tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet East, West Ontario, and Pacific. First pitches at 7 o'clock. Greg Zahn and Jamie Campbell will get you set with the pregame show on Sportsnet. And we'll take you, we being Primetime Sports, we'll take you right up to the first pitch in Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Arash Madani, will join me as my co-host. And Joe Siddle will join us in the 5 o'clock hour from the Dome. And we'll get his take and focus in particular on the September call-ups and see if there's any surprises there. If you haven't heard, the Jays have called up Dalton Pompey, Jeff Francis, Ryan Tapera. I'm going to miss somebody. No. Aaron Loop and that guy. I was waiting for Madani to come in. The mascot, Munenori Kawasaki's been called up. So you know that whatever happens the rest of the season, you know whose face is going to be in TV all the time. It'll be Munenori mugging for the cameras and, you know, jumping over the railing. And he may help them a little bit. But it's going to be fascinating to see Dalton Pompey in his return to the majors. So again, Dalton Pompey, Jeff Francis, Brian Tapera, Aaron Loop, all called up along with Munenori Kawasaki. We'll talk to Joe Siddle about those call-ups and see if there's any surprises. LeVar Arrington, Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, and Doug Smith to join us as well. Canada's losing to Argentina at the half, by the way, at the FIBA Americas tournament in Mexico City. James Sharman is our Soccer Central analyst. Yes, we're going to talk soccer today. You know that McCowan's off for another 3 or 4 days, so we're going to squeeze some soccer talk in. It was the end of the transfer, or the closing of the transfer window today in England, which is essentially the end of... It's like if you took free agent frenzy and ran it over about 2 months, that's basically what you're looking at. There was some ridiculous money thrown out, and there was some ridiculous logistical issues. In particular, one focusing on Real Madrid's bid for David De Gea of Manchester United. James Sharman will join us in studio when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the best sports talk on the planet on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Primetime for Tuesday, September 1st. Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCowan. A little bit of breaking news. I'm joined by James Sharman of Soccer Central. A little bit of breaking news, though. The Kansas City Royals have just announced that the team has been hit by an outbreak of chickenpox and that Kelvin Herrera and Alex Rios will be away from the team for at least 2 weeks each. Now, you know, like me, your first hear chickenpox and you kind of roll your eyes. Remember about all that mumps stuff that happened in the NHL. And keep that in mind. The spread of illness is the worst nightmare for traveling teams. It's absolutely the worst nightmare. Now, Mr. Sharman pointed out we should find out where the do a little detective work, find out where the Royals were. They're at home right now. They were in Tampa. They were in Tampa.
So the Rays right now are very nervous.
The Rays right now, in all seriousness, the Rays right now are very nervous. And again, this is thinking about what happened in the NHL, the way the mumps spread. I was going to say spread like wildfire. That's probably not the best the best way to describe it. But anyhow, there you go. So the Kansas City Royals hit by an outbreak of chicken pox. And Andy McCullough of the Kansas City Star reporting that the Royals are saying that initially Alex Rios and Kelvin Herrera will miss 2 weeks because of the chicken pox. I'm going to tell you a very quick story before we go there. When I was covering the Montreal Expos, Delino DeShields caught the chicken pox on opening day in Cincinnati. And they had to, Charlie Montoyo was a player who was in spring training with the Expos. And basically, they found out he was like the Typhoid Mary. A bunch of minor leaguers got it. DeShields went down to play in minor league camp just before the Jays, or just before the Expos left. He caught it in Cincinnati. They quarantined him in the hotel room. They had to find somebody in the training staff who had already had chicken pox to drive him to Montreal because he couldn't fly, obviously.
Wow.
So
danger pay.
It was danger pay.
Must be for that guy.
However, 2 days later, Bill Peterson, who was the beat writer for the Cincinnati Post, came down with the worst case of the chicken pox. The worst case of the chicken pox. It turns out, God's honest truth, he had interviewed Delino DeShields before the...
Really?
Anyhow, so DeShields sent him an autographed bat, a ball, and a jersey top. So there you go. Just a little story about measles, chicken pox, fun things like that. That is not why we have James Sharman here. Although I thank you for putting up
I'm your with communal that disease expert, though.
You are the communal disease expert. The transfer window closed today in England. And
ooh, yeah, such fireworks today, huh?
It was, yeah.
It's like NHL all over again, isn't it, really?
Well, I mean, it is. It's like free agent frenzy spread over a couple of months. But in this case, I mean, the I guess the major storyline to come out of it, of course, is the David De Gea, the deal between Man United and Real Madrid falling through, and now of course both sides are taking turns blaming each other for the deal having collapsed. For our listeners and our viewers who may not be entirely familiar with that transfer process, what makes it so complicated to get a deal like that done? On deadline day.
Well, I mean, it shouldn't be. I mean, Real Madrid are complaining that United opened up their transfer talks today, essentially. They've had all summer, right? So there's transfer windows in soccer. There's a winter window and a summer window when you can trade players or sell players. And in soccer, generally, you're selling players. It's a money deal.
And David De Gea is, I think he's been Manchester United's player of the year for the past 2 years.
Yeah.
It's been pretty clear he wanted to go to Real.
He's a Spanish player. He's for his entire career wanted to play there. Yeah. So, we thought this was inevitable for the last year, actually, just the last few days, few months.
So this deal should have been done, and it sounds as if even, I mean, money's always an issue, but it sounds as if at the end of the day, the sides, if they didn't necessarily come to an agreement on money, it sounds as if Manchester United thought they were getting enough to at least file the paperwork and get it done.
Well, this was a player plus cash deal as well. So there was De Gea going to Real Madrid and cash, and Keylor Navas, another goalkeeper, coming the other way, which makes it a bit more complicated because you have registration issues there. You have contracts being cancelled, contracts being negotiated. Because in soccer, when you acquire a player, his current contract is torn up and you negotiate new terms, new deal, new money. So the player has a power. The player can always say, no, I'm not going to sign with that team. So the deal's off the table. Happens all the time.
So when people throw out this dollar figure, like this was a reported 29.3 million pound deal, that's just the money going from Man U.
Yep.
Or I'm sorry, the money going in this case from Real Madrid to Man U for the player.
Sure.
The contract that De Gea has to...
Aside from that, this is purely, this guy is worth this much money.
Right.
Then you'll sign a 6-year deal, say, for whatever it is. They then value Keylor Navas at a certain amount of money, say 10 million. So really it's a 39 million pound deal. But so it can get complicated. In this case, I mean, listen, they're throwing out lies left, right, and center here, right? No one's admitting fault. So Real Madrid are saying that Man United sent their application in the wrong format. They couldn't open it on their computer. A bit like the old jammed fax machine issue, right? Scenario from you know, baseball.
Harry Redknapp as well. Wasn't he famous for having issues with fax machines?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, he couldn't read too well either, Harry.
Yeah, that's true.
Part of the problem, I imagine.
He did write a book, though.
Oh, someone did.
Yeah, go ahead.
But it can be complicated, but I read a report today. A leading agent said, listen, if you really want it done, it can be done in about 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, we have things called computers, things called email. There are programs in place to make this process easy, quick, and efficient. And so someone has messed up here. Someone that's going to get fired, I imagine. At the same time, there's a lot of people saying now that neither team really wanted this deal to be done, because Real Madrid, if they wait a year, he's a free agent, they can get him for free. You know, forget the £30 million plus Keylor Navas, he's theirs for free. Mm-hmm. United want this guy. I mean, he is a world-class goalkeeper. If not for him last year, they wouldn't be finishing in the top four.
Right.
He really is one of the best handful of keepers in world football. Even for a year, they'll take him.
Keylor Navas isn't a...
Had the great World Cup, right?
Right, but he's not the same quality.
I don't think so. He's good. He's a good shot stopper, but De Gea is the full package. He's great shot stopper. He commands his area, will organize the defense, and has great distribution, which in soccer is so important in the modern game. So he's a full package, whereas Keylor Navas isn't quite that, but still a very good goalkeeper, you know, and certainly a starting goalkeeper on very good teams. But yeah, neither team, from what people are saying, really, really want this deal done. So maybe for the public perception, they showed that perhaps they were trying to get it done. I don't know. Right now, they're both fuming. They're both, you know, putting out statement after statement, and no one's admitting to anything. So I'm sure in the coming days and weeks, we'll find out the truth.
Now, Manchester United did conclude a deal for a 19-year-old striker from Monaco, Anthony Martial. $55.2 million U.S., £36 million pounds. And, you know, it's. I was talking to a friend of mine, another Man U fan today, and he was beside himself. He said, it's just, he said, never mind the money, but he said, whoever said that the key to success in the Premiership is to go out and get a lot of guys from Liga.
Yeah,
I said, well, Thierry Henry worked.
I know. And that's a comparison with
that's
this guy,
a comparison
right?
with this guy. Yeah. But that's a lot of money for a 19-year-old
Hasn't scored
kid.
Many goals either, right? Mm-hmm. Monaco, I think, in his career, in 60 games, he scored 14 goals.
Yes.
Right? So he's hardly prolific. He's got all the tools, they say, as Thierry Henry. He's called Mini Henry when there's a few of those around, right? But his cousin actually said he's called Mini Henry because he's got the same shaped head. That's why he's called
him.
Not because he's got the same skill set. Which is a concern if you're...
Yeah.
But Louis van Gaal, he's been around the block, right? He's a bit of a character. I'm sure he's not that stupid to waste money on a player. This guy's got potential. That's what it's for. But this team right now needs someone to score goals now. Mm-hmm. Not in a year from now, 2 years from now. Wayne Rooney's not getting the job done for whatever reason. They're not a very balanced team in many regards. So it's a strange one, that's for sure. All these teams waiting until the last day of the entire summer to make these deals, there's always going to be panic buys. And whenever these deals happen... The fingers are pointed. You're making a deal because you're panicking. You've got to do something. And I think from a PR standpoint, it looks terrible.
On the other hand, James, fans of Arsenal and Tottenham Hotspur, two large English teams, probably aren't accusing the ownership of panicking right now.
They're an Arsenal fan right now.
Arsenal, the only club in the top five leagues to not bring in any players. Now, I know they'll say that they had paid her check and they did some business last year as well. But what I don't get it. All we're hearing is repeated stories about the huge jump in TV money next year that for the Premiership. And why would a team like Arsenal? Is it just
makes no sense.
Is Arsene Wenger, is it a philosophical thing with him? It really is.
He wants to say that he's done it the right way. He's grown, he's nurtured his youth to come through the ranks, which is nice and all, but they haven't shown that they can do it just yet. This is a very good team, very close. They're that close to being a championship-winning team. I actually picked them to be my favourites this year because I assume they'd buy someone. And when you're Arsenal, who charged more per ticket than any other club in world football, right? It's the highest ticket in world football at the Emirates. It's a big stadium. They just rake in the money on match days. They're a huge club. They should be winning trophies every single year. For him to once again say, no, I'm not doing it, what I have's good enough, it, to me, is inexcusable. This team has to spend, and sure, you might spend too much on a player here or there, on maybe an older player who can provide some goals now, but you've got to do it. You're that close to being a championship-winning team. Spend the money. Everyone's saying spend the money, but this guy, he wants to be you know, the new Barcelona. But I'm sorry, there's only one Barcelona right now. You haven't got Leo Messi or Arsenal. So you can't do it that way. You've done a lovely job. And you have to, I guess, applaud his ethical standards in football that, yeah, don't spend to win. It's a nice idea, right? But in modern sports, is that really a reality? I don't think it is. I think if you're an Arsenal fan right now, you're shaking your head saying that maybe it is time that Arsene Wenger, after all these years, he's been there since, what, 1996? Maybe it's time he leaves and get some fresh blood in there who will actually, you know, do it the right way.
James Sherman joining us on Primetime Sports. We saw teams such as West Brom, Everton, at the trade deadline, hold firm, hold on to their players.
It's good to see, isn't it? Really good to see.
Berahino with West Brom. And I wonder maybe if we aren't realizing enough, James, that one of the effects of this, the TV money that's coming in, is teams that think they're going to be up in the Premiership next year. I think West Brom has reasonable expectations of staying up there. If I'm them, I'm saying, you know, we're not going to sell our good young players at a discount anymore, because you know what? We got all this money coming in next year too.
Yep. The money comes in starting next year for the next 3 years, and it's astronomical. You know, going to essentially double what we brought in. So why would we sell our good young players? Now, maybe in January, when you've got enough points in the bag that you're going to survive, then he's maybe worth more money.
Right.
Then you sell John Stones if you're Everton or Berahino if you're West Brom, who, by the way, sent a tweet out soon after the deadline saying he will never play for that owner again.
Yeah,
he'll be playing probably in a couple of weeks' time, I'm sure, after the international window. But yeah, you're right. I mean, why would they? And these big clubs trying to muscle in and bully these smaller clubs, it's worked in the past, but I really give so much credit to the Evertons and the West Broms to say, no, not this time, sorry. Mm-hmm. You know, we need these guys. You've had all summer as well to find replacements, and you haven't done it, so too bad.
I think, you know, the thinking is that Tottenham thought they were going to get Berahino for a song West Brom.
Yeah.
And
the player wants to go there.
Yeah.
Usually they've got the power, you know. It's a mess, it really is, but I'm very, you know, without being condescending, quite proud of those smaller clubs, once sticking it to the big clubs.
We just have a few minutes left. It is the international break. Canada's got a match with its traditional the grudge match against
Belize. Oh, man, yes. Bring out the flags for that one.
Well, what I did want to ask you about, though, is you know, anybody who's followed Toronto FC or followed the Canadian program, I mean, I think we're a pretty realistic group in a lot of ways. But I also think that we look at this program as being, I mean, it's so shy on talented players that when you have a guy like Jonathan Osorio and he's not picked,
I know.
You can come up with excuses, I guess. But what's going on there? Why isn't he? He should be a mainstay.
And with respect to a player like Carl Becker gets in there.
Yeah.
Now I know Belinto Floro picks by position and role, right, and the different kinds of players. But you're right. This team has such lack of creative, game-breaking type players, and I'm not going to put that all on Osorio. Right, he's still a young player learning his trade, but he's a very good player with some real promise.
Mm-hmm.
Surely there's a spot on that squad for him. There has to be. He's played well this year on a team that, you know, we know defensively they can't play very well, but he's an attacking player on a team that's very good going forward. He's learning from Sebastian Giovinco. Mm-hmm. He says himself his game's improved so much this season just playing beside that guy. To me, I don't know why he's not in there. It's a personal thing, maybe. I'm not sure, but you look at this Canada team and they should get past Belize. I'm pretty confident they will. I mean, if they don't, well, you know, watch out. But really, they're not going to make the hex. The next stage is very tough. There's not a very good squad of players. And it's harsh to say that. It may seem unfair, but it's true. You watch them play. You know, the quality is not there right now. They're half decent. They won't be embarrassed in many games, but they're not going to win many games. And I don't know who's going to score their goals. So the future is bright. 15, 20 years from now, maybe, because we are seeing slowly some changes at the grassroots level, very slowly, I'm aware. Perhaps kids being coached the right way. There's light there, but we won't see the fruits of that for a long, long time.
Yeah,
but still come out and watch the game on Friday. Please do,
because
this team needs support. And you know what? It's a great night out regardless. It's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun, and of course, the venue's great. And
it won't be there for a while, because with the construction this fall, the November games are likely won't be in Toronto. We're not sure where yet, but do the math. There aren't too many spots where they can be played, right?
Right. James, I appreciate you joining us today.
Hey,
it was great.
Happy to, Jeff, anytime.
James Sharman of Soccer Central joining us in studio. Again, the transfer window has closed. I think it's still, well, it was open in Scotland until midnight.
It doesn't matter. They need longer than that, I think, to fix that league.
Yeah, I think they do. I don't think anything earth-shattering is going to happen there. James, thanks for doing this.
Cheers.
Arash Madani will join us, and Joe Siddle He'll be along from the broadcast booth at the Rogers Center as the Jays and Indians get ready for the second game of the three-game series tonight at the Rogers Center. Back with more primetime sports on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.